and you have to find artificial ways to cope, because a normal human being just cannot cope with a rhythm on his own. That's when everything started to get difficult for me. But at some point, I was meeting old friends, and they say, "We don't recognize you anymore." The problems came one by one. They added up on top of each other, but the company was successful.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new season of Naked by the Future Farm. This is where we invite entrepreneurs to share their stories, to strip down emotionally, and share with us the mental health struggles they experienced in their entrepreneurial journey. For season 3, we bring you more stories, more amazing individuals, and more tools and insights. Today's episode was a bit of a surprise to Vladdy and myself. Never in our wildest dreams did we expect to be talking about Chanel and Jean-Paul Gaultier on Naked. But this is where today's guest is taking us, the glamorous world of fashion. Yves Cornu started off following his passion, studying Russian literature, ended up through a number of twists, taking over a necktie business, and transformed it into a supplier to the world of high fashion, haute couture. He opens a window into a world where everything is about appearance and perception, style over substance, where everyone is performing and pretending. We learn how Yves' desire to belong and the pressure to fit in and keep up slowly sent him spiraling. Things at home were also getting increasingly difficult, so partying around the world with the requisite drugs to keep going and hanging out with the biggest names in fashion was an easy escape from reality. Yves finally came to breaking point when his mother passed away and he was not by her side. As a result, he could not function for months, not able to get out of bed, let alone running a business. How do you recover from that? How do you rebuild your life? And what about the business? For Yves, it was first and foremost his daughters and then his new life partner who helped him get better. He also had therapy and coaching, and very importantly, a complete disconnect from his old life. But it has also taken him 3 years for that. Now, Yves is happier than ever, a fulfilling marriage, a business that values humans and the environment, and a life as far away as possible from his old one. We are very grateful to Yves, if only for the very last thing he said in our conversation. There's always hope, 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 hope. Please meet Yves. And just before we do that, a quick reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review Naked to help us reach more people with stories such as Yves.
This is Naked by the Future Farm, where entrepreneurship is stripped to its vulnerable core. Brought to you by Vlady Meško-Brestinska and Nektarios Lolios.
Hello, Yves, and welcome to Naked by the Future Farm.
Hi, Nektarios.
Hi, Yves.
Hi, Vlady.
Nice meeting you. Finally, so heard a lot about you.
Okay. We usually do a small check-in about where we are. So I'm in my usual home in London. Where are you, Yves?
I'm currently in my office in Limoges, which is in the southwest of France, where we finally got sunshine after 2 months of rain. It's been a dreadful summer so far.
Yeah, and you shared with us you're in the middle of nowhere, which I was like jealous of. Because you can see the nature behind you in the window.
Absolutely. Amazing. Our office, which is a wooden building, neutral in CO2 emissions, etc., is located in a forest. Which is just a fantastic place to go to work too, because when I want to get out, I just get out. There's Wi-Fi around and we have beehives and we have tables outside and it's a wonderful place to work.
Wow. Even more gels. But we have good weather. I'm currently in Slovakia. So no Pakistan, no London at the moment, but spending a few weeks here. The people who listen, they know that we venture out a lot in different places.
I'm still digesting the beehives. I mean, I heard many things, but having beehives around your office is, wow.
Are they on the roof? I know this is a complete like derail, but are they the beehives that people keep on the roofs of the buildings?
Why put them on the roof when you have so much space around?
Yeah, so that's true.
They're among the trees, and we produce like 500 kilos of honey per year. So, and we spread it around among our customers and friends. And so everybody here in the office has been, has got to learn how to deal with bees, and those who want can collect the honey, and it's fun as well.
Wow, sounds like we might just think about maybe a retreat over there.
Sure,
bar theme.
So Eve, we met not that long ago at a retreat, and it was one of these events where you get to know each other very quickly, really deeply. And I was really impressed by you sharing your story with a small group of people. It was a very intimate event. And when I heard you talk, I thought, oh, it would be fantastic if we can have you share your story with us in our audience. So first of all, thank you for doing this. I really appreciate that. I'm also very mindful that this is not something you have shared publicly with many people. So this makes it extra special. But there were two things that were also particularly interesting. One of them is that usually when we talk to entrepreneurs on Naked, they're usually at the younger end of the spectrum. And it's also nice to hear it from somebody who's been around for a while. And we connected over that because we're pretty much the same age. But the other one was also because you have worked in an industry that is completely alien to us. And one of the things that is really important for us on the Future Farm side is that we also look at the definition of entrepreneurship and try to extend it to go beyond what people usually think when they think about entrepreneurs, which is the tech startups and the things you read about in TechCrunch. And but you come from the fashion world.
Absolutely.
And maybe this is a good moment to let you tell us a little bit about what you've done professionally and what your life was before you started Facility, and we can talk about Facility as well.
Sure. So as you very nicely mentioned, I'm not the youngest entrepreneur around. To come back a little bit on my background, a long time ago, in the last millennium, I studied Russian literature at the Sorbonne University in Paris, which was not the best way to think of entrepreneurship or whatever for the future. But it was a passion, and my parents were good enough to let me go through that passion. I didn't want to be a teacher. I didn't want to be an interpreter. I just loved Russian literature. And So after a while, I had to go find a job. But at that time, before finding a job, I had to go through 1 year in the army. And I taught Russian to, at that time, people in the French army who were going to the Soviet Union for different reasons. I will not mention here, but you can somehow guess what.
He's already getting really interesting here from many, many reasons.
And then I worked a little bit for the French army what is nicely called a liaison officer. And then I decided that was not for me. And I looked for a job, and I found my first job in the fashion industry, which was completely by chance. I worked for many years for a retail chain store in France, which was very interesting. But at the end of the day, it was just being part of a big group and just being a number, and just that was not me. So after some years, I decided to get out of this and go and work for one of my suppliers, which was based in the Lyon area. Lyon is famous for textiles and silk weaving. Mm. And this company was specialized in weaving silk for ties, neckties. You know, those things you were putting around your neck if you wanted to be professional years ago.
A long time ago.
A long, long time ago. And so I started working for them as a sales director. And so to make a long story short, this was a company which was 150 years old, so very traditional. It was the fifth generation of the same family running the company. And it was still working like 150 years ago. So after a while, when there came the time for them to change generation at the hand of a company, there was no questioning. The one who was taking charge of the company was the oldest male of the family. You see the state of mind of this kind of companies. And that was in the 2 years 2000 around. So it was so anachronic. And what was sure to happen happened. The guy who took charge of the company was not okay. He was the oldest male of the company, but he was not able to run the company. And so I took over the company. I took some shares of each part of the company of the family, and I took over the company. And the first thing I do, and this was on the Monday, and the first thing I did, not exactly on the Tuesday, but very quickly afterwards, is go to court and file for bankruptcy for this company to be able to rebuild it from scratch. Good start, a very good start as entrepreneur. So I had to rebuild this company completely. So I decided we had to get away from this single product like silk for neckties, because obviously the market was just collapsing worldwide and 90% of the ties were coming from China anyway. So we had to refocus on something else, and I decided to rebuild this company to work for the ladies' wear, and more specifically for haute couture. So we had to learn from scratch how to design for these people, how to work with these people, how to make things that were impossible to do. That was fantastic. I mean, the beauty of the things we were producing made us quickly a name in the industry. And so we started working with all the great French haute couture houses, maisons like Jean-Paul Gaultier, Chanel, Azzedine Alaïa, whichever.
Was this your very first entrepreneurial experience?
Absolutely. I had absolutely no idea on how to read the balance sheet, on how to do anything. I had studied Russian literature.
Yeah, because you sort of say it very lightly and with such a, you know, ease. You also said, like, you entered the fashion industry by chance, right? So not by design. And then you also said, like, they told me they're leaving, you are not leaving. And so I took over the company. And there was such an ease in how you said it.
Yeah, because it was easy. It was really easy. I mean, I just didn't want to have this know-how being lost. Mm-hmm. And it was, I wouldn't say it was, I felt it was my mission, but mm-hmm. but somehow, yeah, it was, because you just cannot collapse, or you just cannot destroy everything just because your family ego. I mean, it's criminal, and I felt I had to do something. So I said, okay, I do it. I'll see what happened.
Yeah, because we talk a lot here on the podcast about this intrinsic motivation, deep motivation for entrepreneurs to go on that mission of to do what they want to do, right? So I was curious what that is for you, and it came through, like, at the richness of that, I guess, the tradition and everything that you saw is there and not to be destroyed by, as you said, a family disputes and stuff. So
Did it feel like a risk? As in, were you scared? I mean, it's one thing to go, yeah, I can see how it works. I've got this vision on how we can make this, turn this around. But were there also the voices in your head going, okay, can I actually deliver on that?
I haven't done it ever.
At that time, I wouldn't say, I didn't even think about it. I really, because I don't know, maybe because it was a big time of questioning for me as well in my family life. I was, so my first marriage was not going very well, and et cetera. And I thought, okay, I have to just forget it. I don't know what's going to happen anyway. But if I don't do it, it's done. I mean, it's the company's done. So let's try. I mean, it's and the questions came later. The questions came later because, of course, as I told you, first thing I did was put this company in bankruptcy to rebuild it. So you have to face the court, you have to face the bankers, you have to face this kind of things. And then the questions come because you have to offer something, you have to build up a business plan, something I didn't even know of, this kind of things. And I had ideas, but it's a different thing to have ideas and to put them into perspective and to start working on them. Mm. So, yeah, the questions came later because the success came very quickly. And this reassured all the people around, like bankers mostly. But that's when I started to ask myself questions, was I legitimate to run this company? And I felt I wasn't. On top
of... Wow. That came when the company sort of was climbing the success. Yeah.
That's weird. That's weird because, I definitely saw there was a big success coming. That's when I got a little scared. I thought I have to do something to reassure myself. And the company was running pretty well. Of course, rebuilding a company on a different product, bringing it on a worldwide basis as well. I was traveling all the time. I decided in order to bring myself this legitimacy, I have to go back to school. And on top of what I was doing, I started an MBA. just in my free time, like middle of the night and weekends. This was maybe not the best idea I ever had, but that's what I did. It became a very difficult time because, now I know how to read the balance sheet. I know how to see perspectives. How do I bring the people in the company, which have always been, somehow, I wouldn't use the word slavery, but the company was run like in the 1900s. How do I bring them to approve this change, to approve this movement towards something different, this entering into the 20th and 21st century? And it was just more human relations, and that was very difficult because maybe I went too fast on that. You know, change is always a worry for people, yes. Especially when most of them have known one company in their whole lifetime. And I wanted to include them in the decision-making process, and I wanted to have them speak out about the problems if we were facing, etc. And that was too much of a shock, too fast. that's things I was doing like the way I was feeling it, because as I mentioned before, I had never run such a team. Okay, I had maybe an assistant before, or maybe 2-3 people work, but now I had a group of 70 people to run, And this is and you had to you have to learn it the hard way. And this is not something you learn very quickly. So the problems came one by one. They added up on top of each other, but the company was successful.
I do wonder. There's one thing to have to learn how to build a business. There's another thing how to learn how to build a business in an industry that you didn't grow up in, because Russian literature, right? But on top of that, this is a world that is highly glamorous, highly visual from the outside, right? And all the things you associate is just people having a fantastic good time. Were you part of this? Did you become part of that crowd? Were you mates with all the big names and the models and the designers?
Unfortunately, I did. As you said, from the outside, it's so glamorous. It's so wow. Of course, if you want to develop this kind of business, a lot of things relies in PR, public relations with these people. So you have to be a part of a crowd if you want to move up with the crowd. So I entered that world. At the beginning, to me, it was like acting, performing something. Like, okay, I have to pretend. I have to be nice. Mm-hmm. I have to wear the right things, say the right words at the right time. I entered this glamorous world little by little, but it's not a world where you can partly enter. Mm-hmm. Either you're in or you're out. Mm-hmm. And somehow I was caught up in this like hurricane, like, you know, once you're in, you can't get out. And it took more and more on my personal life, because this is a world of partying, of pretending all the time. And at some point, I was in. I didn't realize I was in, but I was in. And I started to enter this jet set fake world. So I could go, for instance, I could fly on a Friday to Brazil for a party on the Saturday and fly back on the Sunday. I could go to New York for one day, or Mexico City or whatever. That was crazy.
Yeah, that adrenaline just hits. That's what I was thinking, you know, the buttons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it just needs to be always more.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you have put your foot in that system, if you don't go further, faster, higher, no. But if you don't enter this and go very deep, you're out and you're not trendy anymore. So it's a run forward, and I didn't realize it at all. I mean, but at some points I was meeting old friends, and they say, "We don't recognize you anymore. Who are you?"
Mm.
Because to keep up with the rhythm, traveling around, I traveled so much at that time. One of the positive things is that I got the platinum for life status at Air France.
Yeah, I guess one.
I don't even need to travel at all anymore because I got this status for life, and it's very, very, very seldom given. So just to give you an idea of the number of hundreds of thousands of miles I was flying per year. But no, to be more serious, the problem is that to keep up with that rhythm, to keep up with that space, running a company, partying, jet setting, going to through MBA, going through a divorce, you have to take something to help you at some point.
You know, I have this sudden protection feeling that I nearly feel like I want to hug you, which is weird in a way, but I guess it's not, because I want to come back to something you said, which stayed with me since, which is you said this sentence that, am I legitimate to run this business? And from there you went towards, like, I went to the MBA and there was a personal life, and then the business went like towards great success, and I started meeting these people and there was a hurricane. And I just felt like I saw you somewhere in the middle of this whole thing. And I was thinking, like, who takes care of this human being in the middle of all of this?
The human being doesn't exist in that world. I mean, I'm sorry to be so abrupt, but a human being doesn't exist. It's just disposable things, you know. And it's difficult to get in, but it's very easy to get out, to be thrown out. So if you don't want to be thrown out, you have to go through all of this, and you have to find artificial ways to cope, because a normal human being, and I'm fully normal, cannot cope with a rhythm on his own. I mean, that's when everything started to get difficult for me, and the coup de grâce, the final hit, was and we talked about this, Nektarios, was that I lost my mom. She got sick, and I lost my mom. She was very young. And I wasn't there. And I wasn't there in the last moment to tell her I love her and be with her. And very quickly after that, I lost my dad, because it just simply couldn't live without my mom. And my whole world collapsed. And it was like I blew up. I didn't know what I was, where I was. I didn't know how to behave, and it was just like a complete blow up. And I was personally destroyed. I was not able to do anything anymore. I was there was a morning. I just couldn't get up. That was it. Finished. Over. Party over. Game over as well. So of course I was not able to run the company. I was not able to do anything. And these were very, very, very hard times for me. You couldn't. Ended in a very bad way. I could have ended up in the street. I could have committed suicide. I don't know. Anything was possible. And I thought, okay, I just need to rest for a while and start again. That was completely stupid, because when I got out of all this, I said, okay, I'll take a 2-3 weeks break and that will be over.
So when you say start again, you mean going back to the same old?
Of course. Mm-hmm. And then I say, okay, stepping back a little, a few weeks, maybe take a holiday or something. And I just wasn't able to do anything during 6 months. Anything. And so I got rid of a company. Thank God I have two wonderful grown-up daughters who were around me, who helped me. But without them, I don't know what would have happened. And basically, it's taken me, almost 3 years to recover. I worked with a psychologist. I worked with a bunch of people who really coached me and helped me. But these were difficult times.
Thank you, Eve. Thank you for sharing this. It's a harrowing story, right? And now hearing you going into a bit more detail, there's a couple of things that really stand out for me. And that's this thing that wasn't clear to me when we spoke last time, which was this feeling of being trapped inside something, not being able to get out. But at the same time, something that, because you started by describing this world as a world of pretending, something that feels deeply inauthentic.
Yeah.
So how can you marry this inauthenticity of this whole industry and you not feeling part of belonging in there, but at the same time knowing that the only way to exist is within that tornado, right? When you were in it, and you know that I'm asking this because I had my own experience of being in something that didn't feel right, but still going at it, right? Without achieving platinum status with British Airways for life. Did you feel the tension? Did you actually have that experience of, I actually don't feel like I belong here, but I'm just going to go with it? Or did you really blinkers, just shut it down, use whatever chemical assistance you could find to survive within that? I'm curious if there were these little voices, but you just shut them down, or were they not there at all?
They have sometimes been there at the beginning. But as I was mentioning, my private life was also in a difficult moment. And I think it was somehow a way to run away from the problems as well. And I think my mind was just ignoring the alert signals, because there has been so many alert signals, and thinking backwards now, I can hear them, I can see them, but obviously my mind just decided to refuse to listen to them at the time when it was still possible, maybe to do something or to stop something. But you were speaking earlier of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. And I think it was also part of it, because if I go home, I have to face my problems. If I go on running away, on the instant, it's fun, it's nice, it's because I've done some things. I've gone to parties, I've gone to places I'll never go again in my life, and I would never have thought of going to, and that's. I mean, you're just a human being as well on that point. It's somehow, wow.
Yeah.
See where I come from. See what I've done. See, because I am not coming from a very wealthy family or whatever. I mean, so I said, wow, look at me. I'm in this incredible place along the Bosphorus in Istanbul, and there's all these fireworks just somehow for me here. And I said, that's somehow, how do you get away from that?
Yeah, we value that as society. I mean, I have all the Vogues here around me because I just love it. But part of that's part of the problem as well. You know, like the headlines value that lifestyle and meeting all of those people and stuff. I want to ask you about that because we were doing a little bit of research and it says that about 25% of people who are in the fashion industry are sort of prone to experience mental illnesses. So what have you seen around yourself? Like, do you have any more reflection on that space that you found yourself be part of?
I could not describe it better, describe this world better as a middle ages court around the king, you know, traveling around with the king and with you have the dwarfs. You have the people just here to make fun. You have the clowns. You have the, and to me, this is exactly that. I mean,
King of the Sun, Louis XIV. I was thinking, you know,
and it's all. And how do you want people not to have mental problems? Mm-hmm. It's all fake. All these people, when you meet them, it's like air kissing, you know, oh, you're so beautiful, I love you, you're wonderful, and behind your back, that's going to stab you 3 seconds later, that's for sure, and you know it. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't say the right word, or if you don't say, if you're out for a while and you miss something, then you're out of the game. Mm-hmm. It's really, to me, like one of these courts, when you can imagine how people were you have to be on your knees in front of whoever is standing in front of you. Mm.
You know, we see this whole movement change in the athletes world that some people and the youth generation also, not all, they're not all sort of from the young generation, but a lot of those voices, they feel like that matters. Like my mental health matters and I'm going to speak out. Do you see any of that in the fashion industry? Like when you are sort of looking back right now, do you see any change happening?
I've completely cut all my relationships with that world. So I could not say how it's evolving. But what I see from the outside is not very enthusiastic, I think, mm-hmm. Because you have this new trend of influencers and this kind of people. I'm sorry, but I think it's just getting worse and worse and worse. Maybe things like, I wouldn't speak about sexual abuse or these kind of things mm-hmm. in that world are changing because people speak out. The models speak out. Maybe some things are evolving on the side of models, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. on the whole world or the whole community, I wouldn't be so sure.
Mm. So we're big friends of Esther Perel, who is a psychologist who has her own podcast, and in one of the episodes recently, she had two models who were talking about how they want to find a different way of working within the industry where they have more choices and being able to allow to have a baby, to be allowed to have a baby and all these things. And it was really insightful to get their perspective as women in an industry that is built on being a commodity. Mm-hmm. And it was just an interesting facet to the, and it didn't sound like a lot is changing. But I also find it really interesting that you said, look, I've completely disconnected from this world. So kind of also reflecting back on your journey, it's also interesting to see, okay, there were the signals. I did hit my lowest point. I had to rebuild myself up. But I have a feeling that in order for you to be well, it also means a complete disconnect from this toxic artificial environment.
Yeah, that was absolutely necessary for me. I couldn't even seeing it from now with a few years backwards. I can't even understand how I got to this mess. there was no way to continue to have any relation. And anyway, once you're out, you're out.
I would like to go back a little bit to one phase that you described. And it's also because right now I have somebody very close to me who is in the space of sort of paralysis from analysis and a lot of anxiety from a lot of options in his life. And we are worried as a close people are around that person, like, because he doesn't yet feel that he's ready for the help. He doesn't want to hear the help. He doesn't want to hear the other perspective. I want to sort of learn from you, like, how was that for you? Because you described, like, there were a lot of things that were piling up and hitting, and you find yourself paralyzed for 6 months, you said, not to do anything. What was it that made you think, like, okay, different, this needs to be different. I need to reach out for different support systems. I need to redesign this, reboot myself. What was that that sort of made you rewire that thinking process or feeling?
I think it was definitely my relationship with my daughters, because we've always been very close, and they of course, they could see something was wrong. I mean, it was not possible to not. They were still studying at that time, and their relationship with their mother, with whom they were living, was very bad. They were still minor at the time, yeah, and they required a judgment to come and live with me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the relationship they had with their mother, and I said that was, I think, the triggering point, and said, okay, if you want to come with me and I'm in that state, that's never going to happen. If I go to see a judge and I'm like a wreck, so I think that was maybe what kicked me in the ass and made me stand up again or whatever. I think that was the trigger point.
Yeah, I'm hearing love. I was listening to another podcast, which is about eating disorders, and the psychologist said that, how do you support those people when they're in that space? And she said, they just need to feel the unconditional love, really. That's one of it. So that's a little bit what I'm hearing here as well. Mm. Mm.
So you're going through this process of grieving your parents, grieving to some extent your old existence, because no matter how bad it was, you still feel the loss. At least this is me bringing myself in, looking back and going, it was a shit show, but I still struggle to come out of it. And now you've started something new. So you're involved with something very different. And it was funny, because when we first met, the first thing I remember you saying was how passionate you are about your garden. So this was not the story I was expecting to hear the next day after saying, oh, this is this gentleman who loves his garden. And then you go, no, I was on a plane partying with fashion people. And then, but you're also doing something different again. So your life has taken a complete turn, right? Two questions. Let's start with the easier one. What is it that you do now, Eve?
Okay, so transition after all of this mess, I went abroad. I went to live in Switzerland for a while. I enjoyed it, quite an easy and very 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 quiet life. But I met the new love of my life. I met the person who was going to be my new wife. And she said, Switzerland's not for me. Please come back to France. I said, okay. So I looked for a job in France. And I said, okay, not in the fashion industry. I found a job as sales director in a shoe company, luxury brand. I said, okay, that's not fashion. I can go. I went there. Based in Limoges, I said, after a very, very short time, I said, no way. I'm going back in the same way. It's not fashion, mm-hmm. but it's the same thing.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Like, isn't that fashion? Yeah. You know, for us, you people.
I looked around and I have other occupations as well. And I got to meet Frederick, who was in charge of his web agency here in Limoges. He said, okay, we have found out something. And that might be interesting for you to have a look at it. So this web agency was a bit not like usual because it was focusing on certain values that rang a bell to me. First one was respect of the environment. And as I was mentioning before, this is a wooden building. It's neutral in CO2 emissions. It's it's displayed so as to be warmed by the sun in the morning and cooled by the forest in the afternoon, etc. That was the first value this company was sharing. Second value was the respect of the human being. Uh-huh. That's interesting and different. So in this company, they were hiring people with disabilities, but also people coming out of prison, ex-offenders who were looking for a new life. They were also welcoming young people from difficult suburbs, etc., etc. And one of these guys, of these young people, and I forgot to mention that in that company, each staff member got half a day per week to work on personal projects, taken on his working time and paid by the company. And during that time, a young trainee, found out a way to modify the appearance of the website just to make it for fun. And he said, and Frederick said, if you can do this for fun, maybe there could be an interest in doing it for real. Because that was the time when the World Health Organization issued a report saying that 25% of the world population suffers from troubles that make it difficult for them to access online content, because they cannot read it, understand it, or interact with it properly. So they thought, okay, if we could just adapt the way the website appear on the user screen, it could be easier for them to access the web. And that's when I met them. And having had in previous times international experience, etc., I immediately thought that's something global. Because if you have Parkinson's disease in Tokyo, in Bratislava, or in Rio de Janeiro, maybe you will have a different medical treatment. But your symptom is the same. Your hand is shaking, and you're not able to click on a small zone because it's too small. Mm-hmm. Facility of the company was launched in 2018. So with this product that could adapt the website according to the pathology of a user. So if you have photosensitivity, if you have color blindness, if you have Parkinson's disease, if you are dyslexic, whatever, you can adapt the way the website will appear on your screen. And you don't have to download anything. You don't have to do anything. It's wonderful. I'm not a tech guy, so to me, it's magic.
In some way, when you were describing the past life, right? So there were also big cities and it was a fast paced and, you know, a lot happening. And there was this, it was dark in a way, right? So it was, I felt like the body was more like shrinking inside and hiding. And now you just ended your note on that. It's like New York, Tokyo. And I suddenly, like, I was excited. And suddenly I started also feeling that pace of the growth, but your energy was still very like white and clean. But I want to check in with you. Like, how is that for you? Like, are there voices coming in, or is this authentic and you feeling well? Like, how are you?
No, I'm really feeling fantastically well. Okay. I'm tired because I'm one week away from my summer holiday and I can't wait for it. But I'm doing very well because I found I finally found a real fantastic balance in my personal life. So I'm remarried now. And we've just the full opposite of my first wife. So it's mm-hmm. just, and we're having fun. It's great. And it's the anti-glamorous person. So first thing, I'm mm-hmm. really balanced now. My daughters finished their studies and they are they have very good jobs, both of them. So that's done as well. And I'm proud of it. When I started working with Facility, my first feeling was, okay, that's somehow, it might be your last job before retirement, but I'm going to end up with something positive and something that can leave something behind and help people. Mm. And I was seeing it as a slow move toward retirement and in a positive way. Mm-hmm. But there's no way I'm going to stop now. I mean, it's growing so fast and so great. And you know, I'm working now. Most of the staff is the age of my children. And it's so much fun because it's a completely different way of managing people. If they want to tell me, okay, forget us, leave us, I don't want to talk or whatever, you have to accept it because it's a different generation. It's fun. The way you interact with them, sometimes I think they see me like the old wise man, you know, and but it's really fun. And I'm really enjoying it. I really, really do enjoy it.
That's really good to hear.
Are you doing anything to look after yourself and your mental health?
I have decided that there is no way at any point that I'm going to let my job destroy me again. There's no way that's going to happen again. And we are very clear with my wife when we, because she's a professional as well, she's very busy as well. But when we feel that it's going too far on one side or the other one says, no, it's time to stop. That's it. And we have found this way to counterbalance each other, and that's working pretty well. Also, as I was mentioning, we live in the middle of nowhere in the countryside. We have a big house, big garden. We have officially one cat, and we have many cats. All the cats of the surroundings know this is the rescue house, you know, where they are abandoned. Okay. Suddenly we have cats in the garden. We don't know how they came here and why and how, but they stay here. So that's why I say we have one cat of the ship. Anyway, this kind of things is so important for your mental stability, that you can rely to real things, put your hands in earth and, you know, grow your tomatoes or grow, mm-hmm. even if nothing's growing this year because of a dreadful weather. But it's very important to have this balance with the real life. And that's not a thing I will decline anymore. There's no way, no way.
I think this may be a good point to conclude. I'm really so grateful. I think I can speak on behalf of both of us for you
100%.
To share your story with us. It was actually even more rich and more extreme than when we had our first conversation. But it's also so wonderful to see how during our conversation, your face lit up at the end when you talk about Facility, and you give off this feeling of being in a good place and knowing what matters and knowing how to manage things. So
yeah, there's always hope. There's hope. It's always possible to come out of something.
I was thinking the same word, and I'm sure that our listeners, you know, we know that some of them may be, they're somewhere on similar, in some path of your journey. Like, you know, they might see a lot of similarities. And I think to see that there is a hope and you can come up to a place that is radiant as you are today, I think it's just beautiful. So thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Eve.
Thank you, both of you, for having me today.
Join us next week to reflect and digest. You've been listening to Naked by the Future Farm, where entrepreneurship is stripped to its vulnerable core. To learn more about our work, sign up to our newsletter or visit thefuturefarm.co, where you can also apply to be a Naked guest. Naked is produced by Dan Turgel and edited by Catherine Dworkin. And remember, subscribe, follow, and rate Naked to help share it with the world.